This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 47 for March 26th, 2006. Joining us now via his ISDN line, so high tech, it's the latest thing from 1992, Doug Kay.
I guess if you have nothing good to say, you might as well at least sound good.
Sounding fantastic, like practically like you're in studio. From Skype, Skype land, we have John C. Dvorak.
Hey, hello. John,
how you doing? And Patrick Norton as well, who is seeing red sniper dots on the window pane. Is it everything okay now, Patrick?
It was just the neighbor starting their construction project again.
Oh, okay.
Now they can fire it back up.
Welcome, everybody. We had invited Robert Scoble of Microsoft Corporation to join us to talk about our top story, but he can't make it. Maybe we'll get him back next week. Actually, there's a bunch of Microsoft news. The biggest story, of course, is that Vista Consumer Edition won't be out till early 2007. Business Edition comes out late 2006 as planned.
That just makes me laugh.
Why would they release it? Clearly nobody in business is going to adopt it until the consumer edition is out, right? Is it just so they can test it?
I don't think that's true.
What's the rationale? Why release the consumer? What is the story? Why are they doing this?
Well, I mean, the word on the street is that they have some multimedia issues in the main part of the code because, you know, they want to incorporate all this cool stuff.
Right.
Nah, I don't know. I mean, the whole thing sounds a little fishy to me. I mean, it's not as though they haven't done this before. There's one rumor on the net that says it suggests that it's possibly some licensing deals haven't been signed off on, and then maybe it's going to be harder to get them to sign off on them because, you know, Microsoft doesn't like to license anything.
And, LA Times says it's a big yawn. Everybody's happy with XP.
I don't know about that.
Well, that's my question, too. I mean, you know, take a look at an IT department. These guys have fought for years to get something stable. And like it or not, they've got something stable. I can't think of anything worse than having to get rid of XP and go to Vista.
Well, and in fact, that was same issue happened with Windows 2000. I think they were very reluctant to go to XP.
Yeah, well, it took a long time. But
a lot of them didn't.
Microsoft has to light a fire on them. I have to say, well, you're not going to get updates.
How many times are you in somebody's office and they fire up the computer and there's Windows 2?
If I had my choice, that would be the version I'd be using.
Really? So, you know, I we all assume that, every few years there's a new major version of Windows and that we're all going to follow it. I wonder if that eventually breaks and we just stop doing it at some point.
Well, you know, one of the things I have a issue with is that what's the difference? I mean, what is Vista bringing to the party?
Well, Patrick, you played with it more than anybody else. What do you think?
Oh, boy.
It's a new user interface. They've taken out most of the really innovative stuff like the file system.
I mean, in terms of what the end user would notice, it would be interesting to see. You know, they plan to ship the file system after Vista ships, whenever Vista ships, .. you know, the interface, they're trying to clean it up and really make it, I think, more OS 10-like. They're trying to root out the security problems. The thing they keep coming back to these days is that it's going to be more secure. It's going to be better. You know, and everybody kind of looks at each other and nods their head and, you know, goes, uh-huh, we believe you. That's definitely your goal. In terms of usage, it kind of reminds me a lot of going from 95 to 98 or 98 to XP, only maybe not so dramatic. You know, some new icons, some new desktop action, the start button's gone.
But what I think users are crying for is a more secure operating system. They hope that it will have been rewritten greatly so that it's safer and more robust and less prone to spyware and infestation, right?
Well, that's one of the things they've done is if you install it yourself and you basically enable everything it wants you to enable, one of the more amusing aspects is that it asks your permission before it does anything. So you go to change the screen size, you get a dialogue, screen size, screen resolution, you get a dialog box back. So it's like, you know, did you do this? Do you want to, are you sure you want me to do this? Oh, well, but it's also maybe the only way they can lock everything down at some levels. Now, the flip side is it's going to be, you know, application 4*Z7x473.exe has asked if it can, you know, do something to something DLL. At which point, you know,
the user has no idea what they're talking about.
And
you know, I'm almost expecting it to say, you know, when you're in the Word document saying, cut and paste? Are you sure you want to cut and paste? Is this, are you the one doing the cut and paste?
Microsoft has done this.
It's not quite that bad, but it's close.
They've kind of done this before. I mean, they've had some annoying, you know, are you sure you want to delete messages in the past? And people just disable them. I also think that they can, you know, there's a balance. One of the reasons Mac is safer is because it does ask your permission before it makes any system changes.
Well, hey, I have an idea.
What's that?
Maybe they should just toss the whole thing and come up with a operating system that doesn't use this ridiculous registry.
The
centralized registry. I mean, this is so communistic, it's unbelievable. It's like the Politburo.
Does Vista still have a registry, Patrick?
It might.
I would... So it never occurred to me that they would walk away from that model.
Well, it would break, of course, it would break every program in existence if it didn't. So I guess it would have to, just as XP has some support for win.ini and the system.ini, just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I agree with John. I think the registry is one of the things that bothers me most about all of those recent Windows operating systems.
Yeah. And it's very trouble prone.
Explain to us why the registry is such an issue.
Well, the biggest problem for me is that I can't get rid of things. You know, if I have a piece of software and I don't like it, you know, there are remnants in the registry that I have a hell of a time getting rid of.
You have one centralized file. It's fairly opaque. It's actually a number of files, but it looks like one central file with everything in it. And it if you uninstall a program, you have to modify the registry. If you install a program, you have to modify the registry. That makes it less robust. It means getting rid of traces of a program are much more difficult because it's hidden away in this opaque file. It's why spyware loves the registry, because they can put all sorts of things in the registry. It's frankly fragile. I don't know if it is a very good way of doing what they're doing.
An interesting thing will be to see the uptake on the OEMs, and when either version starts coming out, to what extent they offer both XP and Vista on new machines.
There was a great little controversy going on because an Australian IT journal, Smart House, on Friday published a story claiming internal sources at Microsoft saying that 60% of the Windows Vista code had to be rewritten. Microsoft immediately denied it and said, in fact, it's not being rewritten. There have been no code changes in the Vista code base.
Because they're using that proven Windows XP code.
Since they've been working on this thing since the year 20 or 2002
it's
or whatever.
1990, I think.
You know, it's like, how are you going to do 60% in 9 or 10 months? It's not going to be doable. So, that story seemed a little ludicrous.
Yeah, I think it's bogus. I think a couple of people sort of did the math and said, well, what's the cost of rewriting 60% of every line of code in the Windows operating system?
Now, then again, it may have just been a criticism.
Maybe it should be rewritten.
Exactly. It didn't mean they're going to rewrite it. It just somebody came up and said, 60% of this code is crap. It needs to be rewritten.
Well, I've been told by Microsoft insiders from, you know, a year ago that when they threw out the file system, that was actually not the first version of the file system. They'd gone back to the drawing board at least twice to rewrite the thing. That, you know, it wouldn't be the first time they've tossed out code and said, we've got to start over. It's not doing that.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think that's probably why they pulled the you know, what is it called, WinFS, or the new file system out.
Right. Well, you know, go ahead.
I saw it about 6 months ago, and I was at a dinner meeting with Jim Alchin. Robert Scoble was there, and, you know, they gave a big fancy demo of Vista. And I turned to the guy next to me and I said, you know, don't we really already have most of this stuff in OS X? And I think the thing that they were so excited about were, visual windows that you could see through, translucent windows.
Alpha channel, yeah.
And then the equivalent of Spotlight. I forget what they call it in WinFS. I said, you know, gee, we've gotten used to this already.
What was their response?
I didn't say that out loud.
Oh.
you're the first one.
You should have had me there. I would have said it.
Yeah, I bet you would have.
Well, it's been said now by a lot of
course, I wouldn't have been there.
So this is, you know, related, I guess. There's a huge exploit going down, or number of exploits now, zero-day exploits on a real flaw in Internet Explorer. We're back again to this, the so-called create text range flaw. Microsoft says they're working as fast as they can to provide a patch, and they, if necessary, will do an instant patch instead of waiting till April 11th, their normal patch date. This was discovered on Thursday. There are already hundreds of websites, according to searchsecurity.com, hundreds of websites that are exploiting this flaw.
And which versions of IE are affected? Do we know?
All versions of... In fact, the vulnerability, according to Secunia, is confirmed on a fully patched system with IE6 and SP2. I don't know if IE7 is vulnerable, but
can you tell us what it does, Leo?
Yeah, it's another one of these buffer overflow issues, and it allows a website or malicious spam, HTML spam, to embed code of any kind onto a computer to co-opt it.
And you say there's a bunch of sites using it. What are
already?
They using it for?
They're putting a thing called SDBot, which is a Trojan horse program on. It's basically they're co-opting the computers. They're zombieing the computers so they can use it to send off spam. SDBot is an IRC bot that, you know, hooks the computer up to an IRC network and then awaits instructions. So essentially they can do anything they want to your system. Secunia discovered it. It's an error in how the create text range method is processed on a radio button control. So you'd have to go to a website with a radio button control. This can be exploited by a malicious website to corrupt memory in a way that allows the program flow to be redirected to the heap. This is a traditional way of, you know, buffer overflow.
Right.
And arbitrary code could be executed, and the code would be to put something like SDBot in your system. It's apparently spreading like wildfire.
And it's spreading like wildfire by the poor, unfortunate souls who use Windows IE instead of Firefox
or
Opera.
That's right. And we've been saying this for a long time. Don't use IE.
Years.
Huh?
We've been saying it for years.
Years. Well, yeah.
Use Opera. Use Firefox. Yeah. Do not use Windows IE. That's the target.
And there are two other serious flaws that are being investigated right now. Microsoft says users can protect themselves by configuring IE to prompt before running active scripting or by disabling active scripting in the internet and local internet security zones, or set your security to high, which means most of the websites you go to won't work.
Hmm. Those are separate attacks. That's not the same as this text area overflow.
No, this is another one.
Right. So all the more reason to switch to Firefox.
Yeah, it's just a mess.
Didn't OS X Apple do a pretty large group of updates for OS X?
They did.
Was it last week?
They did. And we had talked about there were some pretty serious flaws in OS X. And as far as anybody knows, Apple doesn't tell you what they're patching. But as far as anyone knows, it looks like they patched those flaws. Anyway, kind of an interesting mess for Microsoft between the delay of Vista and these Trojan horses. And you got to think that... And this is more of what you were saying, John, that Microsoft's just really struggling right now.
Yeah, I don't like to see it, but I do have the sense that they're dead in the water. I think that Bill's going to have to come back to work or something. I'm not absolutely sure what the problem is.
Well, you know, Alchin, by the way, had already announced that he was going to retire when Vista ships. He says even though Vista's not shipping until 2007, he's still going to retire in 2006. And Steve Sinofs was going to take over. He was the program manager for the Office team.
But I thought he was a marketing. The new guy's a marketing guy. He's not a technical guy.
No, well, he started as a programmer.
Oh, okay.
So he's, you know, and he leads the
turn
leads,
marketing.
Yeah, probably turn marketing. I guess when you lead a team like the Office team, it's pretty.
I don't know this guy, so he may be a genius for all I know. But I do know that years ago, you started to see this erosion of the really best coders over at Microsoft all getting sick of being bossed around and deciding that they should be managers. And I've talked to a number of people that have seen this phenomenon over there. And it's, I think it's an inevitable situation where you have a bunch of old, you know, programmers can't really program at a high level when they get to be 30. And not, right. No offense to you coders out there who are in your 30s. But generally speaking, you know, all these, you know, these kids who can spend all night and eat pizza and live off of Diet Coke or Coke are probably, you know, really the bread and butter for the
mechanism. They're all doing their Web 2.0 companies now. Yeah.
Well, the point is, is, though, at Microsoft is these guys were like either going to quit and do that, or they wanted to be, you know, these guys are like engineers. They want to become the boss.
Right.
They don't want to just be designers or coders or be pushed around by guys right. who don't know what they're talking about. The problem is they have no management skills.
Right.
So you have Microsoft filled up with that kind of situation, from what I can tell.
MSN says that, actually, it's an Associated Press story. I'm sorry. It was published by MSN. That Apple could be the big winner from the Windows delay, because when people go into stores at Christmas time, there won't be any Vista computers. And people,
I don't think that's. I think that's a bogus story. Who's gonna? Who? What general member of the public is going to? Oh God, there's no Vista. I'm not going to buy a computer. I'll buy a Mac. I just don't see that happening.
Right. Yeah, I think you make the decision about what you're going to buy before you go to the store.
Yeah, it's not gonna, you're buying a Windows box or you're buying a Mac.
That's right.
And the only issue is, does that Windows box come with XP or Vista? And for now, for now, there's no choice. There will be a period where you can get either. And
don't you think people want to wait?
I don't think the public cares. I don't think the public even knows what Vista right. is.
We're talking about our
geeky audience, you know, and ourselves. You know, we know, but that's about it. No, small audience.
I think the key, though, is that the upgrade licenses are going to be disappointing for Microsoft. I think that's
the big source of revenue for them.
Yeah.
That's kind of key to the whole enterprise.
And the longer they wait, the longer they're counting on it.
Yeah. Dell has purchased Alienware.
Yeah, what is Alienware? I saw that.
Alienware makes a high-end gaming machine. They're very expensive. A good Alienware box is like $7,000.
And a big margin.
Well, they're not all that expensive, but,
yeah,
but they were one of the first boutique gaming machine vendors.
Right. Obviously, Dell, who has tried to do gaming platforms, but they just don't have the cachet of somebody like Alienware.
Why is Dell buying a cachet of Alienware anymore?
Yeah.
What is Dell getting out of this deal? What is Alienware? What can they do that Dell can't do?
They can sell computer at 100% markup. That's what they can do.
Well, I mean, Dell makes their money from other things, but it's besides. I mean, the thing is that I just don't get it personally. I mean, Dell could have created their own Alienware company, and you know then.
It allows them, I mean, this is like a Procter & Gamble move. It allows them to have a different name and a different branding and access to some other channels, because at this point, Alienware is so far from what they were 5 years ago. You know, their entry-level gaming machines start at like $780, $670, something like that. You know what I mean? They have a reputation.
They're not beige boxes, which is
neither
are Dell machines anymore. Nobody makes beige boxes anymore.
Okay, they're gray.
Dell makes a crummy looking box.
It is ugly.
It's not beige, but it still looks like it was designed by some guy in Texas.
It's a charcoal box,
and it's not just the box; it's the brand too. I mean, Dell has the ability to make everything boring.
It's very staid, but that's what you want in business. I think you hit the nail on the head, Patrick, and you said it gives them access to new channels.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they.
I don't think Dell computers are that ugly. I don't think you guys have been up in the site forever. Sorry, I just had to say that.
You like? Haven't been on what site forever? Dell's.
Yeah.
What about it?
Up on Dell's website?
Oh, you think those machines look good?
I don't think they look that bad. I think they're easy to open.
Do they look as good as a Mac?
Does anything? Do you like the way the
Mac
looks?
Well, does anybody else put a little work into it? Like maybe hire a design team, get Frog Studios, What does it take to look decent?
What's decent? What looks decent to you, John? Do you want a G5?
Looks good. I've seen other boxes that look good.
A G5 Mac looks like a mid-80s appliance.
Hey, a Dell box looks like a 57 Studebaker.
All right.
We get the point. I'd like to let you guys fight for the rest of the day.
You know, Pat likes a 57 Studebaker. That was
It was the wrong choice. Exactly the point.
There's something wrong, though, if John's defending PC boxes and Patrick's defending... I'm sorry, I got it backwards, but... Got John defending the Mac boxes and Patrick's defending the PC box. It just doesn't sound right.
Well, who's going to defend Apple in France is the real question.
Somebody better.
Oh,
man. Segway.
Yeah, where do you come down on this one? This is very interesting.
Well, the gang decided last week that nobody cares.
Oh, you already did this story?
No,
I'm sorry.
Not really.
Well,
not
it
really.
Wasn't law. It wasn't. It's not, still not law, but they finally passed this bill. And Apple is saying it's state-sponsored piracy. And the next thing they'll be doing is giving away free movies. You know, I'm somewhat sympathetic with the French house here. I think that it's clearly a monopolistic of Apple. I mean, they use the leverage of the iTunes Music Store to sell iPods. On the other hand, I don't think the French government or any government would have the right to say to any company how they can do business. It's not like you can't buy the same songs somewhere else.
Well, how very neocon of you, Leo.
Well, you know what the upshot's going to be is Apple just pull. It's only 2% of their business. They just pull out of France. The only way this has any impact at all is if 20 countries do it. And wow. I think only the French would try this.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if there's a number two.
Don't you think that Apple will come back strong on this and say and just pull it right out, pull the plug?
No, they're going to just pull out of France. What's the point of staying there? The French can do their own thing. They're fine with that. They've always been this way. The French are kind of this way.
Right.
And I don't think it's going to kill Apple or anything else. And, you know, maybe there'll be some other marketing strategy or they'll bring something else in there. Who knows?
I do support the notion, though, that, I mean, what Apple's doing with this DRM and not licensing it is, you know, it's pretty monopolistic. I mean, they're not.
Well, what the law says that there's like two different sets of points in the law that are really interesting is one is that all and it's not just Apple, all of the specs have to be made open enough that all the players can play any of the locked sources of music, right? And the other thing that's interesting is they're reducing the fines for piracy down to like, you know, $100 from $250,000, or, you know what I mean, some
all right.
remarkably
now that,
small
you know
amount.
That makes, you know, I've from when they first came up with that idea, the first thing I thought of, you know, that's what this 2-bit piracy should be. It should be like a traffic ticket. It shouldn't be like a life sentence in jail or an execution the way the RIAA would like.
Who's going to enforce it if it is that serious? You know, and on the other hand, if it's just a fine, maybe it'll get enforced.
Well, the RIAA has been having a jolly good time whipping out civil lawsuits against people.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true. They don't have to have...
I'm sure that's how they're funding themselves these days. That's my new theory.
The state of Illinois has fined a fella $250 for, take a guess, borrowing Wi-Fi.
Yeah, a guy was sitting there. You know, this is another example of some bonehead that sits in his car outside someone's house.
Yeah, but what's wrong with that?
I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
All he has to do is give it back. If he gives it back, he can get the money
back.
He
was borrowing it.
Yeah, right.
I don't think there, you know, I have a lot of issues with this. As far as I'm concerned, if there's an unopened channel and somebody wants to just throw, they're throwing it into the guy's car, the signal. I mean, he's not going into the house. I've argued this till I was blue in the face.
Well, you know, in the state of Illinois,
I'm sick of arguing it.
It's illegal. And,
you know, the guy who's the prosecutor there, too, used to be, or the guy pushing this, some guy, like I have his name, but anyway, he's the head of the IT department, too. I mean, I don't understand what he's thinking. I mean, this is a bad precedent. It's going to cause nothing, but, like, this is like police have enough trouble with cocaine dealers. They don't want to go around enforcing this kind of idiotic, who cares? I mean, who cares that this guy was, what was it, killing this guy's bandwidth? Or was he like, it just makes no sense.
Sir, take your hands off the computer and put them on the steering wheel where I can see them. What is the source of the internet access you're using, sir? Mr. Dvorak, please do not get hostile. What is the name of the I mean, it's just like...
I feel for the police who have to enforce it. Absolutely. It's crazy.
How are they going to...
Well,
and how are you going to enforce it?
I guess if you're sitting in a car at night outside a building, typing on your computer, they might ask you some pointed questions, just as you said.
You know,
where did you get that access?
What does it take to just kill the connection or close the box? I mean, I don't get how the guy got caught.
He was sitting in his car outside. I think it was outside of business.
I know, but I mean, how dumb is he? The cops pull up and, you know.
Well, he probably didn't know it was illegal.
Yeah, it would be fun to read the police report, you know, pulled up behind.
Oh, that's a great idea, Patrick. We should be able to get the police report and read it.
All right, I'll work on it.
It's a bloggable, dvorak.org/blog.
It's a bloggable. I'll work on it.
There used to be all sorts of other reasons you didn't want to be caught in your car parked somewhere, but now there's a new one.
Now it's
now what you have to do is you have to be making out with somebody and then have the computer like on the floor just in case, you know.
But officer, I was just making out. That's all.
Okay, move along.
Toshiba has announced another delay in the HD DVD. It won't be out now. It was going to be out by the end of March. It's now not going to be until sometime in April. They don't say when. They say it's because they're waiting for the movies to come out. I still believe the conspiracy theory that there's tough HDCP issues to solve with this HD DVD.
Maybe. You might be right.
Are you going to run out and buy one when they come out?
Buy one?
Yeah.
For $1,000.
That'll be the day.
See, that's the problem. I don't think it matters when they ship. I don't think anybody wants it.
No, I do want it, but I'm not going to buy one. I'm going to borrow one.
Oh, okay. So you'll be all excited about getting this thing.
I'm not going to be excited. I would like to see some HD DVD movies. I mean, if you have a HD system and you watch Showtime HD or Mark Cuban's HD Net and you watch some of these movies on HD, you don't really want to watch the movies without HD. They just don't look as good, especially if you're blowing them up real big. I think HD is terrific. I think it's a great technology, but there's no way of doing the pre-recorded thing, and the public still hasn't quite made the complete transition yet. When they do, though, I think the old stuff's going to be tossed out.
Oh, I agree with you. I just don't think that it's going to be HD DVD or Blu-ray that's going to bring it to the masses. I think it's probably digital delivery and.
The file sizes are too big for digital delivery.
Now, what's the relationship between the Toshiba announcement and the overall availability of HD on DVD? Are they controlling the format?
Well, there are two formats. Right?
They control HD DVD, and Blu-ray is from Sony.
Gotcha. Okay.
Sony's July. We're all waiting for movies to come out.
I'm so far behind on that stuff. I need to catch up. I need to get a VCR.
Yeah, there you go. My tip to you, Doug, stay away from the Betamax. I don't know if they're going to last.
I've had one on order for a couple of years now.
So have you Preston Gralla brouhaha? You know Preston, don't you, John?
Yeah, I do. What's the brouhaha? I missed that one.
Well, this is the two-tiered internet quote. I don't know if you talked about it last week.
The FCC. No, we didn't. The FCC guy.
Yeah. The chairman of the FCC was apparently misquoted by Preston Gralla in his blog, saying that he favored a tiered internet and having a priority fee that allows you to prioritize your bandwidth depending on how much you pay.
Yeah, we blogged that one on the Dvorak site. It sounded terrible. I mean, I think this FCC guy must have been inundated with hate mail.
Well, and in fact, apparently he never even used the word tiered. The reporter added the tiered into a comment, and so it's not the quote. If you read the quote, apparently, I'll put links in the show notes. But if you read the quote, apparently, that's not what he said. So
what did he say that the word tiered would make such a huge difference?
Let's see.
Wasn't he actually talking about just paying more for higher bandwidth, for higher speed? Wasn't that all it was?
Martin also added he supports network operators' desires to offer different levels of service at different speeds at different pricing.
Different levels of service at different speeds. I think that's kind of tiered.
Yeah, well, he said that consumers who don't pay for higher levels of internet should not expect to get higher levels of performance. He did say in a following press conference that the commission needs to make sure that there are fair trade ways to ensure the consumers get what they are purchasing.
Sounds like tiered to me.
Well, I think that last part is kind of revealing where get what they are purchasing. Right. I've had some,
he didn't use the word tiered. He's saying tiered. I mean, if it was all about speed, that would be one thing. Yeah, you get more for your money, you buy faster speeds, but he's not talking about that. He's talking about different levels of service, not different levels of speed.
Well, he's also talking about actually getting the service you're supposedly paying for, which I think is a big deal.
Oh, we've never had that. That's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen, but it's amazing to watch how heavy some of the packet shaping going on at some ISPs is when you're dealing with people who download a lot of video or download a lot of audio. And it's kind of funny.
Nobody disagrees that internet service providers shouldn't be able to, as Comcast does, as everybody does, charge extra for higher speed. That's been going on all along. When we say tiered, we're not talking about speed. We're talking about services.
One aspect of this is the new Cisco routers. And one of the people pushing this, by the way, would be Cisco because they got these new routers that do deep packet analysis.
Yeah, and they say, well, if you want to have voice over internet, sorry, you'll be paying a little bit more. It's not about
right.
Speed.
If they can look at the deep packet analysis router, can look at your service and see that you're using Skype a lot. And they say, this is ridiculous. You're using Skype. You're chewing up this or that, even though you're paying for it.
Right.
But, you're not paying for Skype. You're paying for whatever.
What we don't want. And I don't think that the Chairman Martin actually endorsed that. I think he's talking about different prices for different speeds, not tiered.
This is not resolved.
Different levels of broadband service at different speeds and at different pricing. I guess you could say, well, what does he mean by different levels? Does he mean you get to use VoIP if you pay a little bit more? You're right. I mean, I think he needs to make a clarifying statement, I guess.
I believe that anybody who wants to download competitive services over the last mile of a major cable company or AT&T-owned service should be, you know, forced to pay extra for the content they signed on to the web delivery to begin with. You know what I mean? It's like that's pretty much what this comes down to.
Well,
peering is void, and that you're not paying for bits. You're paying for the bits that they're willing to let you pay, and that the people who actually use the bandwidth they think they're paying for, you know, should be capped.
This reminds me of a conversation I had with Cablevision a few years ago when I said, you know, you guys really, you're a data service, you know, and they said we can't make a living as a data service. We have to.
Oh, bull.
We don't, you know, the numbers don't work. We can't charge you by the bit. We have to charge you for premium content and premium services. And that's what.
Yeah, but
that's clearly what they want to do. That's what Comcast is trying to do to you, John, when they try to install this.
Well, I don't know for a fact that it was Comcast that did it, but Comcast recently upped my speed to a substantial. I'm like 6.5 megabits per second up or down, and then a three.
And they're doing that nationwide. Yeah, they're doing that nationwide.
Jesus,
yeah,
Mary, Joseph, Dvorak's using our system. Quick, give them more bandwidth.
No. They're
blog
doing it
about
for
us.
Everybody. They're doing it for
I
everybody.
Will blog about it. But the thing is, I got this message from one of my spyware firewalls saying, you know, you some tiered service. What was it called, Leo? It's a thing from Microsoft.
It's a layered service. LSP is what it is.
Right. I got a layered service notice saying that some DLLs were trying to be installed in it. Seems unlikely that it was from a browser or something I was doing on the net. It seems to me, I don't know where it, I just blocked it. So it didn't
well, and the reason it. The reason your software said watch out is because spyware uses this layered service provider capability to insert itself into WinSock. Basically, it modifies your TCP/IP stack so that it can hook stuff into it.
Right, and I wouldn't put that past Comcast because when I first signed on to Comcast and I used their little disk, to get the service running, if you run all the programs on it, it does install some weird spyware, which I again blocked because I didn't see what the point of it was, and it didn't do anything for me one way or the other. So I think that at Comcast, I don't know whether they know that this is a bad idea or somebody's sold them a bill of goods, but I suspect, although I can't confirm this and I need to, but I suspect that they're playing some, you know, silly games with people's computers.
Well, that's the kind of thing you would do, for instance, if you wanted to keep an eye on whether they were using BitTorrent or Vonage or some other service that you wanted to charge them for.
Right. In fact, I could see them doing it. I mean, just one example of what Comcast does when you get subscribed. All of a sudden, I mean, they go in and patch a bunch of stuff. If you run Outlook Express, not to fire Thunderbird for anybody interested in my complaints, but if you run Outlook Express after you get a Comcast cable modem, it says, when you boot it up, it says Outlook Express by Comcast.
Yeah, I hate that.
I don't even know what the point of that is. It's kind of embarrassing. Of all the things I want to put my name on, that's not one of them.
Microsoft builds that capability in, by the way, and everybody used to do it.
You know, that brings up a good question. Is there any reason to ever install the software that comes from your ISP?
I mean, no. Any machine especially for a cable modem.
Well, any machine you buy today has the ability to route to the cable modem or a router that you might have at home. And I just don't see why anybody would need to do that.
Well, and the reason they want you to do it is so they can install all this adware on your system.
Right.
Least get a banner in your Outlook Express saying brought to you by Comcast. Right. And don't you think, John, that there's probably quite a few unsophisticated users who might say, well, thank you, Comcast. I'm so glad you provided me with this.
I am absolutely sure that's true.
So, you know, it's a goodwill thing. They're just trying to build.
Well, these are the same guys, you know, when I was talking about people poaching signals, you know, somebody from Comcast, some Comcast installer sent me a note. Because I noticed in some parts of the country, you'd go like Chicago, for example, and if you check in anything about the fifth floor and you boot up your laptop, you get connected immediately to somebody's local Comcast wireless. I mean, just it happens just automatically. There's nothing you can do to prevent it. You know, you can turn it off.
You don't even have to actively do it.
You don't even have to do anything. But I said, gee, they're putting these things in and then they're turning them on, and these poor people are, you know, basically feeding the whole neighborhood. And this installer wrote me an email saying, hey, you know, we haven't got time. We have to do so many installations a month, or I'm sorry, a day, and we just haven't got time to explain all the details about security. And so we just, you know, hook it up, turn it on, and we're out of there.
Yeah.
And so there's all kinds of people coughing out, you know, bandwidth. And, you know, these guys are complaining about not making any money selling pure bandwidth, but they're giving it away in that regard.
Saw this, and this kind of bugged me a little bit. I saw that the PodTech Network, which is a podcast network, has just received $5.5 million in Series A funding from Venrock and U.S. Venture Partners. And I thought, wait a minute, there's a podcast network getting $5.5 million.
That's John Furrier's company.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, explain what John Furrier does.
Well, John's company is essentially, I guess it's fair to say, podcast for hire.
Yeah.
So he's out there working with some of the big tech companies, helping them get their message out through the podcast medium.
So
very effectively, by
essentially
the way.
These podcasts are ads.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is all paid placement, as you say.
Paid placement. So now I understand why I got $5.5 million. I don't feel so bad.
I haven't figured. John's a friend, and I still haven't figured it out because I don't know.
$5.5 million because he had a good PowerPoint show, and nobody else has been asking for money. Nobody's monetized this. I mean, Leo, if you wanted to put a corporation together, which I've been telling you to do, we could go get $5.5 million in a weekend.
Yeah, but then they'd want something from us.
So what?
as Doug,
they're going to want some anyway.
As Doug,
so Queso, then quit your belly aching.
I'm not belly aching. I was just stunned. As Doug Queso eloquently said a couple of podcasts ago, he said, "There's always the man somewhere. There's always the man." Hey, I heard an interesting thing about Web 2.0. Apparently, the folks at Yahoo are belly aching a little bit about their acquisition of Flickr, turning out to be a bit of a millstone around their neck.
Really?
Well, Flickr has quite a few photos on its site. It's very expensive for them to run Flickr. Huge databases. People upload their photos. And the problem is they're not monetizing it. The only way to monetize it is by selling prints, and you can do that, and by buying DVDs or calendars. But people aren't doing it.
This is like the $3 billion Yahoo threw into China for no good reason. I mean, they do this. They did it with Broadcast.com and made Mark Cuban a billionaire. Yeah. What happened to that?
Yeah.
These guys at Yahoo, I have no idea what they're thinking or what they were thinking when they bought Flickr. What did they expect to get out of it?
Well,
it's not a monetizable system.
It isn't, really. In fact, the numbers that I was told, I mean, how many photos do you think, how many orders do you think they get a week from a Flickr customers?
They're five.
You're close.
These are all smart money people that have their own printers. They don't need to buy photos from Flickr.
There's something like 10 million users, and they get 80 orders a week. 80.
Oh, my God. that's unbelievable.
So it's cost them a lot of money, and there just doesn't look like to be any way to make any money out of it.
Well, you know, the whole point of that would be posting like AdSense type ads or something,
which they don't do. There's no ads on it.
Yeah, and Yahoo has a system to do that.
Sure. Maybe they better.
You know, they could take, you know, what Yahoo should do, they should take the, you know, the whole key to Flickr that makes it a Web 2.0 play is nothing more than the tagging. I mean, that's
right.
The thing that makes Flickr different.
Right.
And it also has a jazzy
the
UI.
API. The API.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, if they would, but those tags seem to me to be like a brain dead way to do AdSense type ads using the Yahoo mechanism, which a lot of people, by the way, believe Yahoo's AdSense system is better than Google's in terms of actually getting you money.
Well, why don't they just put AdSense on their site? That's all.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Well, they just shoot themselves if they do that.
Yeah, advertising by Google. You know, they can make a few $100 a week
if they're lucky.
It's better than they're making now. I can tell you that right now.
I wonder what it costs to run that site. It's got to cost a fortune.
Well, I use it all the time, and because of all the API and all the different ways you can use it, not only are people using bandwidth by visiting the Flickr site, but they're. The images from Flickr are showing up everywhere. I mean, when I post an image on my blog, it takes bandwidth from Flickr.
Yeah, no, we are bloggers at Dvorak.org/blog. That's plug number 3, by the way. I will refuse to do any more. But anyway,
please.
We occasionally do you'll do a search in Flickr on using a tag. You find some really good images
there.
That's
great stuff.
And you just put them on your blog, and then you have nice art. And who's paying for this bandwidth?
Yahoo.
I wonder what percentage of Flickr members actually did the $25 a year.
I pay for the pro account.
For unlimited.
What's the difference? Because I wouldn't do it.
Just there's a limit on how many photos
you can
upload.
John, you don't pay for anything.
By the way, you should go to my Flickr account and just do a search on Tech TV, because I uploaded about one-third of all the Tech TV photos I took when I was over there.
Oh, really?
Oh, there's a lot of good shots.
Oh, that's great. Now, did you tag them? No.
Just Tech TV.
Oh, well, so if I did a search and tags for Tech TV, I'd be able to...
Yeah, you'll find the cache of photos.
Oh, that's awesome.
But there's a bunch more that I seem to have on a CD somewhere. I'm going to upload them shortly. But there's a lot. You'll get a kick out of it because there's a couple of you in there, and you know it's not conclusive. And I don't have the picture. I did a picture of Patrick once, and I black. For anyone out there who wants to know this, Patrick Norton happens to be one of the most photogenic guys you'll
You've
ever
said
run
this
into.
Before.
If you take photos,
we're thinking you're a stalker, John.
I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. But anyway, so I took this picture of Patrick and I monochromed it and I pumped the contrast and make it look like some sort of a high end thing. It's a great photo. It looks like It looks like a male model from the 30s or something. I mean, it's just
is this in your site here?
Copy.
I feel so attractive now, John. Thank you.
Patrick, like battling.
I just ordered icons of everybody from Nitrozac and Snaggy, so that we all have our own little icons of our heads. And
hey, by the way, on this Web 2.0 stuff,
yeah.
You know, at some point, one of these Web 2.0 companies is going to tank. Somebody's going to shut down.
The whole thing will crash.
Well, yeah, that's what I wonder. If somebody decides to pull the plug on something like Flickr. Suddenly, everybody panics and says, "Wait a minute! That's where all my photos.
All my
stored.
Photos are there, exactly.
Or all my mails on Gmail or something."
No, actually, I don't think that's going to happen. For one thing, I don't think Gmail for sure. But I don't think Yahoo at this point. This is like getting kind of having the camel and the head in the tent. They can't do that. They would get so much ill will if they killed Flickr. I don't know what they're going to do about it.
They're stuck.
They're stuck, exactly.
Yeah, they're stuck.
But what happens if it starts with not one of these companies that's been acquired yet, but one that's got a lot of mind share, so to speak?
A backpack or something
And suddenly everybody says, hey, these things aren't, this isn't a given. There's no guarantee.
This will happen, but this isn't going to happen for a number of years. I mean, this is what happened when we started the run up from 97 to about 2000.
It feels like all over again, to be honest.
It's the exact same thing. It's just got new names.
Yeah.
Well, and also this time it's like companies with like 10 people, including all of their developers and marketing people and founders that have these It's like Flickr had, I think, 10 people when Yahoo bought them.
Right.
So it wasn't looking like, as long as you don't eyeball the bandwidth cost, it doesn't look like a real expensive.
Sure. It was a cheap purchase until they started to pay for all of the storage and the bandwidth.
473 million terabytes a day. Son of a...
I would like to know what kind of bandwidth they're using. It's got to be
It's got to be horrendous.
Yeah, yeah. And it's expensive bandwidth, too. I'm sure that's all Akamized. This is very fast. Akamized. Any other stories you guys are following that you think are worth covering? I'm just looking through our
list here.
I think we covered everything on the list.
Well, there's the MS reorg. Did we cover that?
You mean Sinofsky taking over for...
Yeah, we talked about it.
Yeah.
Alcatel... And like Lucent's finally going away. I think Alcatel's buying them for $34 billion.
What? Really? That much?
Yeah, some ridiculous amount of money.
You wouldn't think they'd be worth that much. Must have patents. There must be the patents, right?
Maybe. You know what it is? I think the two companies together end up being about $34 billion after the if they merge.
Is
just like Bell Labs.
So something about this time of year that there are relatively few announcements. It seems like all the news this week is things are broken or things are late.
It is, isn't it?
What is it about this week?
Nothing new and exciting coming out.
Yeah, I think March has always been a slow month because, I don't know, people are, especially after CeBIT where you have a whole bunch of people doing all the stuff at once. And you also had a game developers and you had the Intel developers forums. And now there's, everybody's pretty much... said what they have to say for a while. I think it's going to be another month before I get interesting news.
I'm expecting, in fact, I won't be here, but I'm expecting to get an email from Apple in the next couple of days because, April 1st is their 30th anniversary of the company's founding. And that's a Saturday. It's a week from, actually, it's this coming Saturday. Right. And there, of course, all the scuttlebutt is that's Apple's going to have some big product announcement either the Friday before or the Monday after. And so we'll keep an eye peeled for the email.
Well, I got one kind of a thing here that would be worth mentioning it for people out there who like to fool around. Because some months ago we talked about Writely, which has since been bought out by Google, I guess.
Yep.
There's another one out there that Michael Robertson, the old MP3 guy.
Ajax Write.
We haven't talked about that. Yeah, Ajax Write is a pretty nice little product. So you go to www.ajaxwrite.com. and it's a, like an online word processor that's it's pretty much like a really just it's
you know what
works.
I like? You don't have to sign up for it. It's just,
right, you can just
it's just
go
there.
On and
just
use it.
And it gives right. you a really good idea of what modern web technology. See, this to me, this is what Web 2.0 is about, is what these new modern web technologies can do in modern browsers is pretty much as good as a desktop application.
And again, difficult to monetize.
Impossible to monetize. In fact, they're not even trying. They're not even asking you for an email address. They're just giving up. So this is Michael Robertson doing this?
Yeah, Michael Robertson. He's one of them with a note on it. Monetizing is one thing, but you know, the Rightly people didn't have to monetize; they sold it.
And well, that's the strategy. I think everybody's
a lot of strategy in the early days of the next bubble are all going to be M&A strategies. You know, mergers and acquisitions, and that's what you do. You build a company, and you hope somebody comes along and buys it because it becomes part of this. Because
it's hip.
You know, make buy decision, and people just buy because it's already been made by someone else, and it's not going to be that expensive, and it's going to cost too much to do it yourself.
Well, how come?
Go ahead.
But like you look at Rightly getting bought and Ajax getting coverage. Why isn't anybody paying attention to ThinkFree, which has been doing this forever?
I'll tell you one word: Java. That's why. See, the beauty of Ajax, right, is it's pretty much as good as ThinkFree Office or ThinkFree Write anyway. But there's no doubt. I mean, it downloads instantly and it runs. And there's I think Java right now is not in people are not excited about Java anymore.
There certainly hasn't been anything new in the Java world for a while in terms of, you know, good new apps that use the virtual machine.
I think it's been superseded by PHP.
Yeah, Java's right. Java like epitomizes Web 1.0 if we're going to use this crazy, these new
And
monikers.
In 10 years, we'll be saying, whatever happened to Ajax?
Yeah, we will. But probably not in 10 years, probably in about 5.
It won't be that
or
long.
Or 3.
Maybe tomorrow.
Live.com is pretty amazing. Tomorrow. Google's customizable homepage is pretty amazing.
I think Live is really coming along. I mean, I'm no huge Microsoft fan, but I think that
the search isn't too impressive.
Is it? It's still MSN Search, right?
It's it's the new Windows Live Search.
But, I haven't even looked at this. Is there any reason I should?
It's a Web 2.0 start page. You know, my favorite is NetVibes, which is very much like Live. It shows you what you can do with Ajax. I mean, the reason I like NetVibes and Live is adding some really interesting features that probably will supersede anything else because it's got a big company behind it. NetVibes is just a bunch of Frenchmen. But the thing I like about NetVibes is it's a built-in newsreader. You can customize the desktop. You can put almost anything on
it. Is this the one you can flip things all over the screen and move
just
things
like,
around?
Just like Google's homepage. You can drag stuff around.
Google's personalized homepage, Windows Live, NetVibes.
Yeah, there's quite a few proto page. There's a ton of them. I think Live, though, is
proto page is the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, proto page is pretty amazing. Live is interesting, though, because of Microsoft adding some real services to this that could potentially be pretty powerful.
Services?
You've played with it more than I have, Patrick. I just saw a story about the services in there. I mean, they have all the obvious stuff, you know, photo galleries and mail, and I think they're going to do
The mapping's pretty good. The mapping actually may be better than Google's, actually.
Really?
It'll be interesting to watch them. There's a lot of nifty features inside of the Google. I'll forward you a link for the mapping stuff that's in there. They do really good search. They do pinpoints.
They have this widget thing so that you can put like dictionary, NASA's image of the day, that kind of stuff in there.
Right.
It's pretty
the gadget gallery.
It's pretty cool. And there's no reason why they couldn't, you know, put a voice over the internet button in there and all sorts of stuff.
Interesting to watch. I mean, the Windows Live Local is pretty cool. Gadget Gallery, I'm kind of back and forth on. It's nice to have the dictionary in there, but it'll be interesting to watch when they make it easy to customize them a little bit more. So you just always find like Google's personal homepage a little easier to add stuff to.
Yeah, it's typical Google thing. It's a little more stripped down. I just opened the Safety Center on Live, and it says, "Oops, we seem to be having a problem with this feed. Please try again later." They can't even get
the proto page is pretty funny looking.
Proto page is amazing, isn't it? This thing is. I mean, it's just
so festive.
I think what it really is a testament to is how good browsers have become. How powerful a browser is now. And it really, if I were Microsoft or Apple or any operating systems manufacturer, I'd be a little worried. Really, more and more, the operating system is just a host for a good browser.
Yeah, but the problem is if you are offline.
Well, that's right.
Totally.
That's what we just talked about with Flickr. If they go away, all my pictures are gone too.
So, Leo, what's your personal default homepage?
NetVibes.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I use NetVibes.
How about you, John?
Mine is dvorak.org/home.htm.
Oh, you came so close to a fourth plug.
/home.htm. No, you're talking about, you wanted me to say Dvorak. Never mind.
You've actually done this for a while, the home.htm.
I've done that home.htm page since about 1994. It's still all text.
And it just has a lot of links, and it looks like 1994. Although
yeah,
I see
it does. It's web.9.
I like that.
Mine's actually a page on my laptop, on my computer.
Yeah, that's kind of what John does. John does that, I think, probably on his computers, too. He has a local page. And that's what this came from, right, John? Was this originally your local page?
Yeah, no, it's a local page. And I tell people how to make it a local page, and a lot of people have actually used it. And as their local page, I look at the numbers. I have about, compared to the blog, this is a low number thing because it's so old fashioned, but I probably have about 2,500 or maybe 3,000 people that use it routinely.
That's interesting. How about you, Patrick? What's your homepage?
Usually whatever website I'm working on at the time.
Yeah, I sometimes will do that because if I have to, you know, go back to that page a lot, I'll just change
it. It's either generally Google search or it's LTV or extremetech.com. That's the WWDL.TV for those of you who haven't been there.
You're breaking up so that the plug that you just gave sounded like me. So
let me substitute a plug.
I'll say it for you, DL.TV, which is where Cranky Geeks is as well now. Have you done more than one show, John?
Yeah, we've done three.
Oh, great. Are you still Cranky?
Cranky Geeks has its own homepage.
We're still Cranky.
Crankygeeks.com, right? Is that right?
Yeah, and actually the one guy who gets credit for being the most cranky, we should have him on the Twitch show once in a while, is Sebastian Rupley.
I like Sebastian, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he'd like to do the show. We should have him as a backup guy.
He's more than welcome. I won't tell people what happened on Friday. Well, I will tell people what happened on Friday. We were scheduled to do this show live in the studio, and it's just one of those days. Everybody got busy or whatever, but in quick succession, an hour or two before tape time, I got emails from everybody saying, can't make it. So it was going to be me and Doug.
And Leo was not too pleased.
I wasn't. It was like, wait a minute.
And I don't blame you. I'd be irked, too. I mean, you have like all these guys lined up. You had like seven people lined up, and none of them showed up, including myself. I got
screwed. Actually, there were two confirmed and four potentials, three of whom were potential on whether or not I would drive them up to Cortina Deer.
Oh, that's what happened. It was they were all looking for a ride from Patrick.
And then I was a wreck, and I didn't trust driving up there.
That's okay. It's okay. As a result, though, I mean, nobody's making any money on this yet. I'm hoping we will at some point. But, you know, since we're all volunteering our time, I don't want to take more time than we need to, so we'll probably keep doing this via Skype for a while and do occasional live ones. If you want to see John or Patrick, there's plenty of ways you can see them on DLTV and Cranky Geeks.
And you can also go to the blogs. But the other thing although you did one while I was gone, I think getting back into one of these studio audience situations about once every couple months, I think would be a really good idea.
I think we'll do that.
Enjoy.
Yeah. And Doug said this. We were one of the few podcasts that actually did a live show. And that is certainly something.
Well, we've done quite a few of them. But, you know, it might be interesting. We have, like, next time there's like a bloggers conference or something. We can get like, then you wanted to get your Robert Scoble in.
Right, right.
You know, he would be kind of interesting in front of a large group.
Yeah, we can start doing some of that.
And we can have more people, too.
A little update on our web redesign. It's progressing along very well. I want to thank the folks at Lullabot. What happened is I went to Amber MacArthur and her team at Archetype, and they did a beautiful design for me. But because we use Drupal, which is a content management system on twit.tv, it then had to be kind of engineered. You know, the back end had to be done. And I went to Lullabot, which is just a fantastic group of people, Lullabot.com. And the reason I'm giving them a big plug is because we ran out of money. We couldn't pay them. And I said, look, you know, guys, we appreciate it. We'll just have to get back to you in a few months. And they're doing it pro bono right now. So I thank you very much, Lullabot. And if you're looking for a Drupal design or any work of any kind, Jeff Robbins, Matt Westgate, and Ted Serbinski, Ted's really working hard on this. And it's looking
How do you like Drupal, by the way?
Love it.
I hate it.
You hate it? Why do you dislike it?
Drupal's sort of like a religion.
It is. It is. It's very much a cult, and I'm in the cult.
Yeah, but you get developers and you ask them to do something, and the first thing you say is, well, how can we Drupalize your idea?
Well, you kind of, you know. But that's true with every content management system.
No, I don't think that's true. Doug, have you played with Joomla?
No, I haven't.
I played with it a little bit, but I don't have an opinion on it one way or the other.
Joomla, I play with the, I have the earlier version, Mambo. And
Mambo, I know, yeah.
Mambo's Mambo. It's the same thing.
But I totally hate Mambo, I'll be honest with you.
Really, I can see why, because it's very difficult to get into. But once you're into it, it's extremely powerful.
It's the other thing is, I think Drupal's code base is a lot cleaner than anything else out there. It's well-written code. And it has a lot more modules. It seems very well supported.
That's the old suite versus best of breed argument. And when we got into it for the Conversations Network, we found out right away that Drupal was able to solve 20% of our problems, and the 80% that was hard, we had to do ourselves anyway.
Yeah, that might be. Yeah. And so, what are you using?
It's all handwritten. It's all PHP. But it's not important that it's PHP. What's important is that it's not using anybody's canned code.
What was Drupal not able to do that you needed?
Well, it couldn't handle podcasts. It couldn't handle audio.
It handles podcasts very well now, by the way.
Well, it doesn't have a good system for handling large objects in general. You know, so the actual handling of the MP3 files. Also, we have a system where we do show assembly every night. Every night we rebuild over... know, thousands of programs in our archives.
A lot of stuff. Wow.
And
Doug, what's your URL?
itconversations.com.
Yeah, itconversations.com is probably the best place to find this. And that, I should also plug the conversationsnetwork.org. That's the other one, conversationsnetwork.org. But that's, you know, we had to do things that Drupal just wasn't even close to. And we got a whole bunch of Drupal developers in. We decided to make an open source project and we brought in volunteers.
What's the name of this open source project?
Well, it's conversationsnetwork.org. It was the content management system. But we killed it. We killed it because what happened is the Drupal people got all excited about it and tried to shoehorn it into the Drupal architecture, and it just made it incredibly cumbersome.
Well, we'll see. You know, one of the things Lullabot's doing, one of the reasons I'm excited about Lullabot is what we're hoping to do. You know, there's a Drupal distribution right now for nonprofits called Civic Space, which is very good. And it makes it very easy for a nonprofit to kind of get a very nice looking website up quickly with all the features they want. And I'd like to do that for podcasting. And so one of the things I've talked about with Lullabot is maybe taking the work that they do for us and then generalizing it and giving it away as Civic Space is given away.
Yeah, I think it's good for you. It wasn't good for us because we're all about that content management system. We're all about, you know, producing, you know, 60 podcasts a week.
Well, you do a huge amount. Yeah, I mean, I only need to manage 10 or 20 podcasts a week. I don't need to do anything like that.
A measly 10 or 20.
Well, yeah.
But anyway, while we're talking about designers, a special hello to Dorothy.
Oh, and that's very important. I really want to mention that, yeah.
Our friend Dorothy Yamamoto, who's in the hospital trying to recover from cancer.
She is the woman who did the incredible Twit logo, the little Twit guy. And it was quite sudden. She went in for a routine checkup. Had blood work done and they found something. So Dorothy, I know she's listening, and our thoughts are with you, our prayers are with you, and get better soon.
We're sending her a DVD player
with all sorts of podcasts, right?
Yeah, and I've got the box right here.
Oh, great! What did you choose?
Hang on, let me see it.
We wanted to get one that would play MP3s and DivX as well, so that we could send her.
I didn't even open the box.
Podcast.
It's a Philips. Something.
So will it do, it does MP3s, yeah?
It does MP3s, it does DivX, it does all the different formats. Excellent. And there aren't that many that do them all.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Good. So our thoughts are with you, Dorothy. Get better. We also thank the folks at AOL Radio for providing the bandwidth for the podcast and broadcasting us on our AOL radio channel and the podcast channel at AOL.com/podcasting. John's available, of course, at Dvorak.org/blog and CrankyGeeks.com. You can do a Cranky Geeks blog. You should, John.
Oh, please. The Cranky Geeks is a blog. It's a video blog.
It's a video blog. There you go. And, of course, DL.TV for Patrick's fantastic show. And, by the way, Prager and Kevin are here, but I understand that Control-Alt-Chicken has released its first episode.
Really?
Yeah. That's Alex Albert's cooking show.
By the way, has anybody seen that or know the story behind that Jack Black movie
Nacho? Nacho Libre?
No, that thing with the
with the
motorcycle. It's like a movie you can it's like a half hour sitcom, and it's like that we kind of grabbed from YouTube.
Huh?
There's a lot of Jack Black stuff.
It's actually quite funny, but it's like, what is it?
Well, you never know with Jack. He's always got these projects going on. You know, he's buddies with Liam Lynch, who we've had on the Screensavers, and what's the name of his band? Tenacious D. He's got a lot of wacky things going on, and he's got a new movie out. He's got a podcast based around the movie. Interesting. I don't know. Huh. We have the founder of YouTube, one of the founders of YouTube on Inside the Net coming up on Tuesday. Interesting interview. There's an example of a Web 2.0 company that just took off overnight. Amazing. And can you imagine their bandwidth, Bill?
That'd be pretty scary.
Yeah, it would be. Chicken cordon bleu, by the way, is the recipe for this first edition of Control Alt Chicken. I haven't watched it, but I can't imagine. Alex Albrecht's cooking show.
That'll be fun.
It should be interesting. Look at the formats they put it out in. H.264, Theora, WMV, XVID, M4V. How many different formats do you put out DLTV in?
Not that many.
Jeez
Louise. Well, what's cool, though, is what the Rev3 guys have done is they have automated that whole process.
Ah.
So
I was going to say, they must have some magic because if...
Yeah, Ron, their tech genius, is basically... scripted together a bunch of boxes off of Linux that allows them to
they press a button and codes it.
Yeah, it's not quite that clean, but it's awfully close, is my understanding.
That's nice. This Week in Tech. All right, guys. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us for another edition of This Week in Tech. We'll be back next week, and I'm hoping Microsoft will join us and give us the inside dirt. Now he definitely won't. Now we'll never hear from him again. Have a great, great week, guys. Another twit is in the can. This one. This one. This one. In tech.